Studio 360.
Science couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive, in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon. A throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive.
That is how movie trailers sounded in 1954. In this case, a trailer for The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
See Titanic underwater battles never dreamed of before in this most terrifying of the science fiction adventures.
On today's show, we're bringing you stories about monsters, about how make-believe scary creatures can sometimes help us express our humanity, and about the creative people who make those creatures seem real. Such as Millicent Patrick. She's the one who designed the creature in The Creature from the Black Lagoon, this humanoid amphibian that was at the time state-of-the-art, in a movie that became an absolute classic of the monster genre. But, as happens, a famous and powerful Hollywood makeup artist took the credit, meaning that Millicent Patrick was almost completely unknown. Until now, thanks to a book called The Lady from the Black Lagoon by a young filmmaker named Mallory O'Meara. Mallory O'Meara, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Millicent Patrick, how and when did you become aware of her?
So when I was a teenager, The Creature from the Black Lagoon was the last monster in the Universal pantheon. I had watched Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Invisible Man, and the last one was Creature. So I watched Creature from the Black Lagoon as a teenager and went online to look up behind-the-scenes photos and trivia about it, and I saw a woman working on the monster suit. It was just a photograph of Millicent Patrick working on Creature from the Black Lagoon, and it was like being struck by lightning. I had never, ever seen a woman working on a horror movie before, working on a monster movie, working on any movie. It was just a photo from set. It's not a publicity photo. It's just a picture of her painting the creature suit, because that was her job.
Right, in this all men's operation.
And she's surrounded by men. She's the only woman in the photo. And that was the first moment where I thought, oh, my God. I could do this.
And as a teenager in the 2000s, a movie from 1954 was not just a strange, musty, black and white artifact. You actually liked it?
Oh, yeah. I think when you are a horror person or when you really get into anything, there's a draw to look at the classics and what started the genre. So I really, really wanted to see Creature from the Black Lagoon. I wanted to see what started all of this.
So tell me more about Millicent Patrick. At that point, she was 30 what?
39-ish?
Yeah. And before that, she'd been one of the early female animators at Disney. How did she get there? What was she doing there?
So Millicent Patrick got hired in January 1939. She started in the ink and paint department, which was very unique at the time because it was all women. It was the women who inked and painted the animation cells from the male animator's drawing.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't looked as an artistic form. It was looked at as like sewing.
Right.
So it was just a huge room full of inkers and painters, and that's where Millicent started, and she got promoted from there to color animation and special effects, where she worked on Fantasia, and then she ended up getting further promoted where she became what's called an in-betweener animator, and she worked on Dumbo, too.
Wow. So there was this women's work area. When she was promoted, was she like the only chick in the bunch?
There were a couple others, actually. She was one of the first. She was also working at the time with a woman named Retta Scott, who was the first credited female animator. She worked on Bambi. So there was a few women, but it was definitely a male-dominated space.
I want to jump back just for a bit to her childhood, because I love her connection to the media tycoon William Randolph Hearst. It's, as you depicted, it's like an episode in a novel.
Yes.
Explain that.
Hearst have a very interesting reach over the life of Millicent Patrick. So her father was a man named Camille Rossi, and he was the superintendent of construction at Hearst Castle in Southern California for 10 years.
At San Simeon, which was built in the 20s and beyond.
Yes, it was a very glamorous place, but that's where Millicent Patrick grew up. She didn't live in Hearst Castle, but that was sort of her childhood stomping grounds was San Simeon.
In like a cottage nearby.
Yeah, down at the bottom of the hill. I think where else could Millicent Patrick have gone but Hollywood after growing up at Hearst Castle?
Yeah. You begin the book writing about a tattoo of Millicent on your arm.
I do. That's what kicked it all off, actually. Well, it's the reason I wrote this book. When you get a tattoo of someone, you sort of become the kiosk of information about them. And the problem with Millicent, when I got the tattoo and until I did all my research, was that there was nothing to say about her.
Right. May we look at it?
Absolutely.
Oh, there. Wow, that's big. There she is on the underside of your left forearm in full realistic detail. As big as a Barbie, bigger than a Barbie.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, she's being embraced by the creature.
Yeah. It was your 17th tattoo.
Yes. Someone asked me this the other day and I had to make a count. I think I have 24.
Really? So you learned about her and you're already involved in horror monster culture in various ways and you got this tattoo. Explain how that led to writing this biography of her, the first published biography.
Yes.
Of her.
So I went to a party in New York and I got into a conversation with a literary agent and he said, hey, I saw on Facebook that you got this new tattoo. Who is this woman? And I said, yeah, this is Millicent Patrick. She designed the creature, but no one knows if she's alive. No one knew what happened to her. And he said, wow, that'd make a great book. And I laughed and he said, no, that would make a great book. You should write that. And then it took me a year of research and private investigating, but I did it. I found her story.
So, Millicent Patrick, she was not just the person who made this monster suit in this famous classic monster movie. She acted. She was in an Abbott and Costello movie, Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd.
Yeah, there's her right in the front. So you see her in color. She plays sort of a tavern wench.
Waiter, give me another one.
There's Lou Costello.
I beg your pardon?
I said, give me another one.
It's her getting smooched by a pirate.
Is it all right with you, sir?
Give her all she wants.
And then Lou Costello kisses her.
And she's very unhappy about it.
Yeah.
She gets this one scene, but she's stunning.
Yeah.
She's a very beautiful woman.
She is. Now, did that happen a lot? Oh, she's a pretty girl. She's around the set. Yeah, make her that girl.
Yeah.
Is that how it worked?
So it was an interesting thing. She got a lot of background work because of her looks, but she wasn't a great actress. You can see in the scene, she's a little stiff, a little stilted. So she never progressed beyond that. But because of her looks, she was featured in the promotional materials for a lot of movies. But while she was on set, there's a lot of downtime for actors. And she was still a visual artist. So she would sketch portraits of her co-stars.
And she had done other monsters, right? There was it came from outer space.
Yeah.
Our mission was to another world. Only an error dragged us toward Earth.
It came from outer space with Universal's first science fiction movie. So they were moving from the movies that they had decades before of the 30s and 40s, Wolfman, Dracula, the like horror coming from Europe.
Gothic horror. Yeah.
To horror coming from space. Everyone was afraid of science. Everyone was afraid of the sky. Everyone was afraid
nuclear
of
nuclear stuff.
Yes. Yeah. So Universal said, we got to get on the science fiction train. And that was the movie, It Came From Outer Space, where Bud Westmore said, you know what? Can you design this alien? And she did.
So Bud Westmore, he was the makeup director at Universal Studios at this time. And that is a whole other amazing story of this Westmore family in Hollywood, this makeup dynasty. He and his father and his brothers essentially ran makeup at every studio.
Yes.
It was crazy.
Yeah, and they still continue. Michael Westmore is an incredible makeup artist. It's this huge dynasty. It started with George Westmore, who was their father. And he invented the makeup department. He was the first person to say to a movie studio, you need to have someone doing makeup. Because back then, when this was all starting, actors did their own makeup. So the makeup would look different from scene to scene.
As stage actors still do often.
And then he had five sons. All boys, of course, they're all sons, and they all got into makeup as well, but they were more beauty makeup.
Right.
They weren't as much monster makeup.
Which is so nicely ungendered. This woman suddenly is the monster person. So she does the alien from Came From Outer Space, and then Bud Westmore says, oh, you're good. We're doing this Creature from the Black Lagoon. Do that?
Yes. So she impressed Bud so much that they said, we have this new movie that we're developing. It wasn't called Creature from the Black Lagoon then. And she said, yeah, let's do it.
So describe the creature.
Oh, the creature. He's called the Gill Man for a reason. He looks like half man, half fish. He's bipedal, covered in scales, big ridge down his back. He has big gills on the side of his head. His hands and feet end in big clawed, webbed, like, protrusions. But he also has a lot of humanity to him. And I think that's what's made him such an iconic monster.
So her job, she's working freelance, create this monster. Some kind of description is given to her, presumably.
Yes.
65 years ago. But what's the process?
So the process was really weird for Creature because originally they gave it to the prop department. And they,
which makes some sense.
It makes some sense, but what they put together was, it looked like a onesie with a guppy mask over it, and it was pretty horrifying. Then they gave it to the makeup department. So she did research into fossils and ancient lizards and fish. She put this design together.
And she drew it?
Yes.
Presumably?
She drew it. She sketched it out. And those sketches went to Chris Mueller, who sculpted it and then molded and then eventually cast in foam latex, and then it became the creature suit. And then she did the painting on it as well.
And she did the head as well as the body?
The whole kit and caboodle.
And she had to do two of them.
Yeah. So Riku Browning is the guy who played the creature in the water, and Ben Chapman was the man who played the creature on land. And you can tell the difference if you look really closely, because Ben Chapman is taller and has an extra stomach scale to make up for the height difference.
Oh. I want to watch a scene from the film where the main character, played by Julie Adams, swims in the Black Lagoon while the gill man, the creature, follows along below watching her, and she doesn't see him.
So Julie Adams is swimming on the surface of the lagoon, and she is just fancy free. She's having a great time. She's laughing and smiling in the sun, and it's very pretty. And then we get to an underwater shot in the lagoon, and we see the creature who's lurking in the weeds, and he's watching her. He's clearly very intrigued by what's happening, and he starts to approach her. Yeah. He swims over, and he starts swimming underneath her. And Riku Browning, with this, like, amazing swimming that he was hired to do. He was not an actor. He was a diver.
And this is all underwater photography.
Yes, it's incredible. The cinematography in this movie is beautiful.
And he's swimming upside down. It's an extraordinary scene.
It's really, really beautiful.
And he's, like, 6 feet from her.
Yeah, he's so close, and it's so tense, but also so beautiful.
Yeah. People love Creature from the Black Lagoon. It is one of this B-movie horror genre, the great ones. Everybody who cares about those movies thinks. Does the Gill Man, the creature's suit, what Melissa Patrick did, also stand out? Was it like a groundbreaking thing?
Well, this was the only Universal Classic monster that had to go underwater. So that made it very, very unique. And it's also shot in daylight, which is very rare for a monster movie. So the design had to be impeccable.
Right. You argue that she deserved complete credit for creating this creature. And as you've described it today, she deserves it. But she didn't get full credit until now. What's your evidence that, yep, it was her?
The guy who sculpted it, Chris Mueller, said, yep, I sculpted it based off of her designs. What we have to remember is back then, there was no IMDb, there was no internet, there was no Twitter. You know, in the screen credits for Creature, the only people who got credit for things were the heads of department.
Right.
So when you look in the credits for Creature from the Black Lagoon, it says, makeup, Bud Westmore. Westmore just got credit for everything instead of the entire crew that created it.
Right. You write about in the book, which I found interesting too, that she was sent out on tour ahead of the film.
Yes.
Which seems strange, right? For this non-famous, below-the-line woman who was involved with making the creature suit, why did it happen?
You know, they were coming up with all kinds of ideas to try to promote Creature from the Black Lagoon, and somebody in publicity said, look at Millicent Patrick. She's beautiful. She's very articulate and engaging. Why don't we have a tour called The Beauty Who Created the Beast?
Aha. Uh-huh.
Except Bud Westmore wasn't very happy about that, because he was so used to automatically receiving sole credit for things that he didn't want people to know that he didn't design the creature. So she went from his creator to his caretaker. They sort of shunted her into this, like, maternal role. But she still said yes. But Bud Westmore said, and furthermore, you have to promise that you won't tell people you designed it.
Wow. And then that was successful. The movie's pretty successful.
Yes.
She comes back and Bud has a problem.
She came back to no job. He was still so jealous of the attention that she was getting, because she was on TV, she was on the radio, traveling all over, that he couldn't stand it. He fired her, and she came back and never worked in the Universal Monster Shop again.
And he, meanwhile, did lots of work. He did Kubrick's Spartacus, he did To Kill a Mockingbird.
The Monsters.
Whereas she kept acting in bit parts for 6 or 7 years, then left movie work in her mid-40s. What happened to Millicent?
Yeah, she never worked behind the scenes in Hollywood ever again. Remember, this was a time where the Westmores were working at almost every single major studio. If she was out with the Westmores, it was bad news for her.
So she was effectively blackballed?
Oh, you weren't going to get hired.
And she lived for another 35 years.
Yeah, she died in 1998.
And Did she spend the rest of her life feeling rejected and resentful?
She did not. You couldn't keep Millicent Patrick down. Nothing could tamp her spirit to make art. And she continued to be an artist for years and years.
Mallory O'Meara, a pleasure meeting you. Pleasure talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Mallory O'Meara's new book is called The Lady from the Black Lagoon, and it's out now. You can see some photos of Millicent Patrick working on the creature and clips from the film at studio360.org.